Welcome back to the Hawkins Reports, a Stranger Things podcast by LSG Media. I'm your host, Dean.
I'm Jessica.
On this week's episode, we bring you Season 2, Chapter 4, Will the Wise. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, yes we are. We're talking Chapter 4, Will the Wise. I'm pumped about this shit. Because we got some wacky stuff going on in this one. We got what I think is for sure racists, overt racism coming out of Billy.
Yeah, that piece of shit.
We got some pretty wacky shit going on with Will, who is now Will the Wise. Hopper and Eleven have, boy, a knockdown, drag-out fight. Hey, Hopper, for sure chill. And yeah, there's plenty to talk about this week. I'm pretty pumped. What are your opening impressions this week? What was your standouts? What was your coulda lived withouts?
I like this episode a lot. I thought this was a good episode where like a lot of things were coming together and we're seeing where things are going to go, like the pumpkin thing, what's
connected.
Actually happening with Will, the fallout between, you know, Hopper and Eleven, finally seeing that Dart is actually a bad guy. Like, for real, he's bad.
He's just an animal.
You know what? Will was like a real standout for me. Oh, and in the shit with Nancy and Jonathan, of course, with the lab. That was some interesting stuff. Yeah, but I really like the stuff with Will. As I continue to say, you know, my worries about how good is Will going to be,
right,
based on just everything, just based on how little we saw him last season. And my God, was he fantastic in this episode where he has to do something real hard, which is be scared and sad and also scary.
Kid crushes it this week.
Like when he ever says he likes it cold, that gave me goosebumps. It fucking scared me.
Yep.
So it was really, you know, I have to say I was fairly impressed.
Yeah, he definitely is a standout this week, no question.
For sure.
What is that little boy's name?
Will Byers.
Noah Schnapp,
eh?
Yep, he's a standout. We got a possible brewing romance between Billy and Steve. Are you excited about?
Yeah, real. Except, well, until like then, Billy was like a racist. So I guess Steve will just bang him to get back at Nancy, and then
now you're out on Billy. You were almost in on him.
No, I was never almost in on Billy ever. No, I was not.
I could tell, guys.
Ever.
Guys, the part where he helps him up and he gives him advice on how to take a charge.
I just thought that they're going to become lovers, and I was curious.
She was like, "Oh man, he's just trying to help out Steve. He's not as gifted athletically or as beautiful in the body, but." I'm sure he's going to help our boy Steve, but anyway,
I did not like him in that moment.
Let's start things off with Joyce speeding off to school, looking for Will. She finds Will looking for Dustin, along with Mike and the rest of the kids, Max and Lucas. And Will is freshly invaded by, I guess we're calling it the shadow creature, shadow monster.
Shadow monster is what I call it.
And at least it's not a smoke monster.
I was going to say it's like a smoke monster, but not quite.
But he finally comes to, his eyes are fluttering. And we get the title card. So, like you said, this is starting off the way, you know, we're starting to see what's going to happen with Will. We're starting to see Eleven and how she's going to get into the origins of her name being Jane, her mother, which is what, Terry Ives or something?
Yeah, I don't remember the mother's name.
And the connection of Will's scribbles to what's going on underground, which, of course, we believe is probably going to be connected to the lab. We got some more information on the lab, and you might be accurate with your assessment of Owens. If you recall what that was, I believe you said he might turn out to be kind of good in a weird way.
Yeah.
Which is sort of what we're
red herring.
Maybe seeing here, which I like.
This might be another red herring, and then he's bad.
That's awesome. So let's come in hot. Talk to me right after the title card. Talk to me about the kids, the two episodes in 2 days. They talk True Sight. And let's talk about Joyce and Will at home.
Oh, we're going to get to... Oh, just from the start with the car when they first get to searching for Will?
Well.
Where do you want me to start? Or after the title card?
Right after the title card.
Okay. So I don't know where the title card happened in this.
So Mike, Lucas, Dustin, and Max are just talking about how we had 2 episodes in 2 days,
okay,
the true sight, and Joyce takes Will home.
Right. And this is the start of like, you know, Max is freaked out and doesn't understand. And they're just basically talking over her because mm-hmm. they know what's going on. And she's kind of an outsider. And we start to set up this disconnect they're going to have with her now.
Sure.
As being outside of the group. I love the scene with her later too and Lucas actually.
Me too.
But
I like Max. I just want to say it right out front.
I
think
too.
She's in an interesting position. And it's kind of cool to see the kids we love so much treating her differently, which of course isn't very nice. It's nice to see kids right. being kids a little bit.
And
a little insensitive here.
It's just interesting because at first I'm like, you know, you bring in new characters and you're like, what are we trying to do here? We need our girl for the group and our 11 replacement, essentially. But I think she's done a good job of not being that and being interesting in her own right.
Absolutely.
So,
and part of that has to do with her backstory, right? Which is very mysterious at this point.
Yeah, very mysterious.
We don't know anything about her.
Her stepbrother is a piece of shit.
Yeah.
That's all I know about that.
Go ahead.
So then, you know, our scene with Will and Joyce, and she wants him to talk to her. And originally, he immediately goes into that same, like, not going to tell her what's happening.
Yeah, interesting, right?
It just his immediate response is to be like, nope, everything's fine. Don't worry about it.
Now, do you think that Will is doing this on some level because he's trying to protect his mom?
Yes, I do. I definitely think that is part of it.
He wants everything to be normal, right? I mean, he's expressed this already this season. He's desperately seeking normalcy, and it's a real right. struggle for him.
Right.
It's sad.
And when he finally does open up, he's so emotional about how he doesn't understand what this thing wants. And mm-hmm. when he says, I just want this to be over. It is very sad.
Sad and scary, man. You hate hearing kids talk like that.
Very, very sad, for yep. sure.
It came for me and I tried to make it go away, but it got me, Mom. I felt it everywhere, everywhere, and I still feel it. I just want this to be over. Joyce says, I'll never let anything bad happen to you. I am here. It's a very touching scene, right?
Yeah.
He describes it through tears as a feeling, and Joyce really glares at the sketch. I like seeing Joyce angry. Like, I really get a... Did you get a sense of anger in
yeah.
her in the way she, like... narrowed her eyes at that drawing.
She's being a protective mother now.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's time. I'm looking forward to her being aggressive. And
right.
I think we're going to start seeing that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, great open. This is an important scene to the success of the show as far as Will's character is concerned, because we see these things happening to him and they suck. But unless that can be communicated to other people who aren't experiencing it, without them directly experiencing it, you're asking a lot of Noah Schnapp.
Right.
Which is, all right, kid, we need you to communicate this. We need the audience to feel something for you as you tell the story of this encounter that you had with the shadow monster. And I think it's a crucial moment in the show as far as Will is concerned. And I thought he did a great job.
Again, I agree.
What do we say every week about this show? Since season one, we've been saying the show continues to do the things it is good at. It doesn't try to do too much, and it continues to hone and focus on the things it's great at, which is these kids and their relationships.
Right.
It's awesome.
No, exactly.
So let's talk 11 and Hopper.
Whew.
I mean, coming out of the gates, he's being really hard on her. I think this is an important moment. You know, again, I'm not a parent, but I was a teenager. I talked to my friends. In fact, I just talked to my buddy Manny, and he was talking about this like crucial moment between him and his adolescent son where it was downright physical, to where he knew that there was this moment where if almost like alpha status wasn't established, the kid was going to fucking run roughshod, because he was like a tough kid. And he told me about it. And I thought of this here. Like, it's almost like Hopper is saying, if I don't establish the hierarchy now, it will never be established ever. And I've heard of this. And I know when I was a teenager, I remember my mom fucking point blank telling me, if you don't go get a job, you will no longer live here.
Mm-hmm.
And she was serious. And I was like, okay. And I was 18 at the time. I didn't go away to college. I fucking worked at McDonald's for 2 weeks until I could get a paycheck. Then I left that, went and did something else. I think that's when I worked at like a bookstore or something. But I remember that day her saying, you're not going to come here if you don't go work. You mm-hmm. cannot come home if you don't go get a job. I expect you to go get applications. I expect you to do this. I expect you to do that. It wasn't like she was going to let me fuck off. And,
right.
you know, this situation with my buddy Manny and his kid, it was, hey man, this is, he knew at one point, he knew that had his son essentially called him out on something, And if he didn't respond to it, his authority was gone in a fucking instant. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, is Hopper doing this here? This is intense. What's your take on this?
Sure. I think maybe it's a little bit to establish this control where, you know, Elle has never been in like a typical father-daughter relationship, and understanding that someone has, you know, the only time people have ever had control over her has been in this laboratory setting where she's been a prisoner, essentially.
Sure. Right, so, which is complete and utter dominance. Like, right. There's no
and so
give
she's
and take.
Rebelling against this now that she's being given the opportunity to. So sure, I think it's probably some point establishing dominance, but I also think it's a huge part emotion on his part. I think he's very emotional about this situation. I think her being gone and like all this work he's put into keeping her safe, the idea that it could have just been done just like that, like made him scared and emotional.
Scared?
No, I did not say us scared. I said made him scared.
Okay.
I probably said because I was thinking of a word.
You did, okay. But it was awesome.
So yeah, I think that there's something about it where it's an emotional situation to him, and that's why he gets as angry as he does.
Sure. I mean, this is a intense moment. Great acting from both of these people, right? We know Hopper's great, David Harbour. I think we also know at this point that, you know, Millie Bobby Brown is great. And this is tough shit here. I mean, this is not just the yelling and the slamming and that. These direct moments of physically challenging Hopper with her power, which is scary because she could probably blow him up, you know what I mean?
Right.
And then the immediately following the fight is that emotional outlet. The emotional sort of, you know, the string gets pulled out of your back and you tumble down like a little puppet and you just bawl. And that's kind of what she does here. It's cool.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I think we're seeing something here too, where we're seeing that like when Eleven is emotional, she gets very violent. And we've watched this. We saw this happen in the last episode with Max and also with Hopper when she throws something at Hopper in the last episode.
Yeah.
And we watch her do it multiple times to Hopper in this episode. You know, violent activity when she's upset. And I think that that's something that we're going to continue to see and is going to become maybe a problem.
I'm interested if that's the case. Yeah, that's awesome. It was great. You have to learn the consequences of your actions, like you said. She says he's like Papa. He calls her a brat. So some name calling. Obviously, the fight gets nasty. Slamming doors, couches into knees, locked doors. It's scary, right? Do you think Hopper went a little hard on her?
A little, yeah.
A little bit?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Jonathan goes home to find Joyce in Will's bed, and he sort of just backs out of the room. So he probably knows that things aren't going great with his little brother right now. And then we get the Wheeler breakfast, where basically Nancy's just saying, hey, I'm going to stay out tonight. And she hops into Jonathan's car.
And the Wheelers are like, sure, Nancy, that sounds great. Who's Stacy? It's like some made-up name. Like, Nancy's like, my parents don't have a fucking clue what's going on. Mr. Wheeler's probably like, oh, I murdered Stacy last week. That's so weird.
I think in my collection of driver's licenses, there's a Stacy in there somewhere, co-ed. Oh,
it's ridiculous.
So just as a reminder, what were they doing last time?
What do you mean?
What were they planning? Jonathan and...
We don't know necessarily, but they were calling Barb. They called Barb's mom.
Yep.
Or we think that they called Barb's mom.
And they set up a meeting place.
Yeah.
Right. We think they did. Maybe they didn't because Barb's mom. Damn, that's hard to say.
But that doesn't make sense because why would they have a tap on Nancy's phone and not Barb's parents' phone? And
because Nancy was involved.
But so was Barb. So were Barb's parents. They
maybe
killed
she
Barb.
Didn't call Barb. Maybe she just did it to set up a fake meeting.
And she called somebody else, but who? Jonathan's rolling at the person in on it. That's what I don't get. The only thing that makes sense is that she didn't actually call the Hollins, but it doesn't make sense that they'd have her line tapped and not have any indication. You know what I mean? Like, as long as she just picked up and she dialed the weather number and they could only hear her end of it, like, it just doesn't make sense.
I don't know, but I do know that they planned on getting picked up by these people, hence the recording device.
Of course. Right. 100%.
So Joyce continues to try and reach Hopper. Tell him to call me the second he gets in. Will gets up. He tells Joyce he feels weird. His temperature is extremely low.
This scares me.
Yeah, I was reading about low temperature. 95, you're in hypothermia. Scary.
Yeah, and, you know, human temperature is so, like, really specific, and it's not like there's a big variation ever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're pretty much close to that 98.6 all the time and only a little higher. It's not like in animals where a temperature can run. There's a little bit more, like, wiggle room, I feel like, overall with the temperature before you start to panic. But
yeah.
I don't know. That scares me. Like, that... In a medically professional, like, point of view, that makes me immediately feel unease.
Yeah, don't you... We never see the number, do we?
I don't remember, unfortunately.
Which means we should address the thing we were very adamant about, not last week, but on week two. Did we say it on the Polywog app? I don't remember.
What?
Nancy never explicitly sees Barb's body.
Oh, yeah.
We were told by one of our listeners. I think Benjamin Prue brought it up, and Annie also brought it up, but we didn't... the audience sees one.
Yeah,
Because Eleven sees one.
Yeah, for some reason I thought Nancy saw Barb's body when they were in the upside down.
I think it's when she's in the tub, in the pool, floating in the gymnasium. I think her the way she looks at Nancy communicates that Barb is in fact dead.
Right.
Because Owens confirms it as much here. He says she's dead. We know she's dead.
Right.
He explicitly says it. So, yeah. That's important, I think.
Yeah.
We fucked that up, and I just want to
apologize. Which is too bad, because now I give even more credit to... I mean, at first I was like, well, Nancy saw the body and Steve didn't. Maybe that's the difference. But neither of them saw the body, so
right.
I guess, I don't know. There goes that argument.
But she knows explicitly that Barb is dead.
She
never doubted it.
Yeah, I know, but now she knows for sure.
Well, she didn't... Yeah, I mean, I don't think she ever doubted it.
I know.
I think if it was something she wasn't sure about and Owen said it, she would have reacted, but she didn't react at all.
Right.
So I think it was Eleven that sort of communicated to her by looking. Do you see Barb? Remember she was in the upside down? And we knew Barb had that fucking thing crawling out of her mouth, her corpse. Anyway.
Yeah. The temp was 95, Sarah Torkelson says, by the way.
That's hypothermia.
Yes.
All right. So Dustin feeds Dart, and then Dustin goes to school. None of his friends are around. He sort of looks around, and he scoots to the back where the trash is, and he finds them digging through the trash. And by them, I mean Lucas, Max, Mike. And Dustin says, hi, Max. And she looks back at him like a weirdo and says, hi. They pick through the trash because Mike says that they're still looking for Dart.
Yeah. And then Dustin's like, oh, whoops. I guess I'm not doing a good job of keeping up with the fact that I don't have this pet at home. Mm-hmm. His lies aren't working out very well.
Mr. Clark has a speech about how living things respond to danger. We encounter danger. Our hearts start pounding. Our palms start to sweat. These are the signs of the physical and emotional state we call fear. And this is cut against Will approaching the bath. A close-up on the back of his neck. It's very tense. And Will calls the bath too hot.
This is with the voiceover.
Mm-hmm.
And the way this kid acts, walking towards that bathtub and being legitimately scared of it. Again, this frightens me. This makes me uncomfortable. This makes, and I know it's like a weird thing, but I just remember being in college and in a biology class and a professor explaining that like rabies is actually considered like the fear of water. Like because of what happens with your body, you can't swallow properly.
Is that real?
That's why, that's a thing that they call it, because specifically like your body reacts where you can't actually swallow water.
Mm-hmm.
That's why there's...
Well, because your lymph nodes are...
That's why there's like the drool and stuff being involved. And I just remember somebody describing it as that way, like the fear of water and like this idea in my head of like, oh my God, that sounds terrifying. You know what I mean? And that's like the feeling I got like watching this. Like, here's this bath and he's looking at it and he's terrified of it.
Mm.
Like so obviously terrified. I'm like, this scares me because something
is this.
Wrong.
Hydrophobia.
Yeah, fear of water.
Yep, is the historic name for rabies. It refers to a set of symptoms in the later stage of an infection in which the person has difficulty swallowing, shows panic when presented with liquids to drink, and cannot quench their thirst.
Yeah, exactly.
Hmm.
Told you.
It's awesome.
I know things sometimes.
I think we know now that that's not real, right?
I don't know.
There is a terrible video online of a 48-year-old person with fucking rabies.
Oh, well, I'm Googling that right now.
It's pretty nuts. Hydrophobia and rabies.
Oh, this one, rabies in human, YouTube.
Oof, it's pretty bad to watch. I don't recommend it.
I'm watching it right now. I'm obsessed with the idea of rabies. I can't get it. I'm vaccinated, guys, so don't worry about it. I'll be safe.
Lucky you.
You're vaccinated too. You can't get rabies.
Yeah, but it wears off.
Not for a long time, trust me. Anyways, if anyone in the chat cared about rabies knowledge.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. That's interesting. But I think back to Will, I think the point about his fear here is, I wonder if his fear is in upsetting the thing because maybe it wants to be cold. And now he is almost, he's considering maybe rebelling against that creature telling him this. But no, he doesn't. He comes back, he says, no, he likes it cold. Now that is fucking creepy.
Yes, very creepy.
Right?
Very creepy. It's that moment to me is fucking scary.
Yeah. This is a game changer, right?
Yes. Like there's something else like now involved here and it's just bad news. Like this is worse than we think. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. It's cool though that we're not, oh, Will's in the upside down. I'm glad that the upside down is affecting our normal world and we don't have to do another upside down romp to find Will.
Right.
I like that the upside down has sort of reached out and touched him this time. It's cool. It's a cool change.
Yeah.
And I think it's necessary.
And it's real creepy. It's very creepy the way that we're doing this. We are getting our, you know, Will in as this character, this part of the show now in a way that is creepy. I don't know how to describe it. I think it really creeps me out.
And it's time. You know, it's time that we don't just see him in one episode.
Exactly. Right?
So Hopper starts to apologize and then he kind of catches himself and he says, I want this place cleaned up by the time I get back and I'll consider fixing the TV. He's maintaining a strong front.
Sure is.
He's maintaining the hierarchical structure. He's reminding her that despite her mind bullets, he's the alpha of the pack, right?
Exactly. That's what he's got to do.
He's doing what he's got to do. Now let's talk about my favorite part in this episode, guys. The basketball game. You ready for this shit?
I'm ready.
So Billy takes Steve to the hole, but offers Billy some advice on how to take a charge in basketball, which was sound advice.
Yeah, at this point in my notes, I wrote hashtag future lovers, ?
Okay. What makes you think that?
I don't know, because somebody said it in the chat on the last episode, and now it's in my head. And
just regurgitating what other people say?
Yes.
Call yourself a podcaster? Just kidding. That's kind of like
Google
the short,
if people like ship them, honestly.
It's like the short definition of... Anyway, today's just not your day, I guess. They hang out in the shower, all cocks out, and they're chit-chatting. One of the kids is breaking his balls about Nancy running off with Jonathan. Oh, shit, you didn't know.
Yeah, that bro was in the first episode. He's a douche. Yep.
Jonathan wagon. And the princess skipped. Oh, you didn't know that. Might be a coincidence. He finds this very funny. He laughs. Did you know how in this moment I was thinking Billy could have joined in on this and he didn't. And he's like, oh, don't take it too hard, man.
Yeah.
I'm really a nice guy.
Because they're going to bang. And I already found an article from Cosmopolitan about how people are shipping them. Some Stranger Things fans really want Steve and Billy to make out.
But I don't think either one of them are gay. It's going to be kind of
weird.
How
do you know?
I don't know. But I'm assuming.
I think for sure, like Billy could be. I don't know anything about him. I think he might be like one of those like self-loathing, like, you know, all right.
So anyway, Steve takes these jokes pretty well. And then Billy reminds us, don't take it too hard, man. Pretty boy like you got nothing to worry about. Plenty of bitches in the sea. I'll be sure to leave some for you.
Ew.
Yeah.
It's gross.
Everybody wants Billy's sloppy seconds, I guess.
Ew.
So that scene almost feels like they're trying to show that Billy isn't just an animal who's going to make fun of people and be an asshole the whole time.
Kind of. Like, they're trying to do that, but they're also...
But then the last scene with Billy happens. But do you see what I mean? Like, the one guy's busting Steve's balling, but Billy isn't.
Right.
You know, they're trying to give him a little bit of a dynamic here.
Yeah.
But he also says a dumb thing. But anyway.
I still hate him.
Okay, you hate him.
Okay.
We get it. You hate him.
I just wanted to make it clear since there seems to be
every time I say Billy, you say, I hate him. Ready? Billy.
I actually hate you now, to be honest.
Fair enough. Nancy and Jonathan wait on a bench. They're assigned a meeting spot, They start to feel this growing paranoia. This is so spy movie shit.
Oh my God.
This is like Bourne Identity. Like you're looking at fucking leg bulges and earpieces and fucking guys with weird newspapers with pistols in the newspapers and briefcases. This is such a spy movie trope. I love it.
And they do a great job with like the tension building just in this scene.
Yeah.
Like making you feel uncomfortable, like they feel uncomfortable, especially when the car is surrounded at the end. It's like, oh my God, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like, is this what they thought was going to happen?
Sure. Yeah,
it turns out it kind of was, but you know.
Yeah, the car won't start. Weird. Is that a coincidence or are they hinting at some sort of weird technology here?
Oh no, that's not a coincidence that the car won't start.
Yeah, they disabled it.
That's definitely not a coincidence.
Yeah. It doesn't start and then it starts up later, which they make sure to show us after they leave the lab. Trouble with your car, miss? I can give you two a lift if you like. I swear I won't chop your heads off.
Ooh.
And then a bunch of people just start closing on them. The man with the dog, the lady. They're all surrounding the car. It's cool. It's a very creepy scene. I like it a lot. It's a very, I don't know, like, it's like an alien invasion movie. Like, they're all fucking not what they seem, kind of. That's the impression I get.
Right, right. Oh, man.
Body snatchers.
Yeah, it's like, it is. Right? It's like body snatchers. That's a great, damn.
So Hoppers goes to the buyers. The door's wide open. Joyce tells him to leave it open. Hopper asks, why the hell is it freezing in here? And they go to see Will, who's just kind of sitting there shirtless like a creep.
Such a creep, honestly.
Now, Hopper's been pulled into this thing yet again. I don't have to think. I just know things, Will says.
Mm-hmm.
Things I never did before. So the first meeting with Will establishes that things are weird. He has been invaded somehow.
Right.
Or at least affected by his experience. And now we're learning a little bit more about his perspective on what he actually knows. We know what he felt. Now we're getting some insight as to what he actually fucking knows.
Right.
I don't have to think. I just know things. Things I never did before. It's like old memories that aren't mine. They are now memories happening all at once. They are now memories happening all at once. Now. It's like they're growing and spreading and killing. Will breaks down yet again. It's very intense. Joyce looks over at the Will the Wise drawing. She asks him to draw. If you can't use your words, you can draw.
Right.
And he does so frantically, darting his hand back and forth across, quick sketching, and the phone rings. It was Mike, which segues us to the Mike scene. So how do you feel about Will the Wise and drawing and this stuff? What's your take on this stuff?
I appreciate that. That's something that works for me. I like the idea that he can't communicate what he's been through, that it's hard for him to do that, but there's another way in which he can get his points across, I guess.
Sure.
And I like that. And we
it has a bit of a trophy feel. Right?
No, but but this is something we've established in season one that he likes to draw, that's yep. the thing that he does.
It's true.
And he can't communicate what he's actually doing. You know, he can't like communicate it in a normal manner. He's mm-hmm. not able to. And he can do this. And Joyce knows that. And
That's the Will the Wise. She looks at the Will the Wise thing and thinks, well, he likes to draw.
Yeah.
And you're right. It's cool. It is established. It's not just random kid scribbling. It's
right.
This kid likes to draw. He does it all the time. And now she's going to utilize that to learn something. And he is just frantic.
Right.
It's great. I bet he didn't even realize he could draw until she sort of said something.
Well, I'm sure he knew he could draw because he was drawing it before. She thought of that too.
Remember, he
drew the demon guy?
Mm-hmm. So Mike sets up a meeting, party members only, Mike insists. And they kind of give Max a little bit of the ass here.
Yeah, this is, you know, like we were saying before, I don't know, Max being an outsider, mm-hmm. like we talked about earlier in the scene with her, the first indication of it, and this is a clear point of it, where he's like, nope, sorry, she's not a party member, basically.
I like that this flies in the face of the obvious thing here, which is her just sort of seemingly integrating into it after she has a moment with Mike in the gymnasium.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Right.
This is realistic to me. Like, when Mike is alone with Max and they kind of chat and he smiles a little bit and he starts to perhaps be overtaken with, you know, being just a good human being, like we like to believe Mike is.
Mm-hmm.
And then in this moment of crisis when the tension's high, he sort of reverts backwards a little and denies her access to the AV room.
Right.
And even though it seems simple, I think it's cool and well written that even though he shared a moment with her when they were alone in the gymnasium, he reverts back to, no, party members only, non-negotiable.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's good writing.
Backtracking.
He is being a little dickhead. It's funny to call a 12-year-old a dickhead. I don't think I've ever done that, except when I was 12.
Oh my
hey,
God.
You little dickheads.
Is that what you used as an insult?
I don't know. But this is real life. This isn't D&D, Dustin, because they're talking about looking into other planes. Mike tells them about the shadow in the sky. Mike guesses this is something that he saw yesterday. They decide they need more knowledge, and Mike insists DART's connected. I missed why he thought that, but
it came from the upside down.
Okay.
Well, said it came from the upside down. He saw it there. It's obviously the Amorous. The thing's real fucking connected. But,
yes.
Yeah, well, Will said that thing came from the upside down.
And he says they need more knowledge, right? Doesn't he say something like this?
I think so.
Yeah, they need more actual knowledge, stuff they can't get out of the monster manual.
Right.
Cool. So I like this because this isn't just Mike missing Will. Mike needs to do stuff as well. We can't just have Mike sitting around worrying about Eleven. Eleven's got her own shit to do, and now Mike has his own shit to do. And then if they reconvene, they reconvene. It'll be great, and we'll all high five, and we'll all tear up. It'll be wonderful. But in the meantime, what we don't want is Mike pissing his pants the whole time, worrying about Eleven. We need Mike back in that role, doing something else.
Yes, exactly. He can't just be missing her. We need to give him a job.
But smart to establish that he is up front. And now, as we get into the major second act of this 9 episode here, where there's going to be all the conflict. It's cool that we already know that this is a thing. In other words, they didn't do it backwards.
Right.
They're not giving Mike all the shit to do and then him remembering Eleven on episode 4. And then we're like, well, that's kind of cheesy.
Right.
It's cool that we established it immediately. And now we're giving Mike stuff to do.
I agree.
So Eleven starts to clean up the cabin. She finds the Hawkins lab box. We're going to come back to that, though, because we're going to go over to John and Nancy. Right?
We sure do.
Boy, this is crazy. So you had some thoughts about Owens, and tell me about what you're thinking now about this character.
I still think that there's like potential that he is, a good guy trying to do good. But
like
now
necessary...
that he already seems like he's trying to do good, I'm like, oh, is this like a double red herring and he's actually bad?
I don't think it's that complex. I think it's quite simple. I think Owens is at the Hawkins lab. And that the team that was at the Hawkins lab before him fucked up. He admits it as much. And now they're trying to do what they can to maintain some semblance of safety with this crazy discovery. And in doing so, it requires certain sacrifices a little bit. And I don't just mean literally killing people, but he says something like, we can't seem to erase our mistake, but we can stop it from spreading. But imagine if the Soviets heard about our mistake. What if they tried to replicate it? The more attention you bring, the more likely that scenario becomes. I have to stop the truth from spreading by whatever means necessary. So we understand each other now?
Mm-hmm.
And he also says something like, want to see what really killed your friend? Mistakes have been made. Right? He comes right in and he gives them this little tour.
Right.
So this is also a weird play by him. Why do you think Owens is in a situation where he already knows they know, so it doesn't hurt in showing them and maybe trying to make this tenuous alliance? Or do you think that this was a mistake by Owens? I mean, what do you think here?
No, I think he's letting his guard down a little bit too much. I think he's got a little bit too much confidence in his own abilities, but I think he's like, okay, we know that Nancy knows these things. We know that she's more curious and having a harder time with it and is not as easy to control. So we need to somehow establish communications, establish a deal with her in the same way they did with Hopper, because they knew Hopper would be hard to control if he wasn't under their thumb. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So then they make this deal with Hopper, like, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not doing it the same way with Nancy, but they're validating all of her suspicions to be like, hey, you were right about these things, but here's how we're fixing it, because that in their mind is the way to get to Nancy and get her on their side, or at least keep her quiet enough, which is what they really want. But he's miscalculating who Nancy is. You know, he's very, very severely miscalculating Nancy.
Right. The lab, if the lab knows anything about Jonathan and Nancy, it knows that they know a lot of shit already based on the experience that already occurred with the kids. Right.
Right.
Now, that said, it might not be a terrible play by Owens because what he does not realize is that by showing them stuff, it's all still hearsay.
Right.
There's no actual evidence. They can't corroborate anything. They can say, oh, there's this crazy shit going on in the Hawkins lab. I think they're old enough, just old enough to understand that if they run around saying a bunch of crazy shit, that the backlash could be pretty severe.
Right. But this is still, like I'm saying too, like he's underestimating her.
I think he is too.
Obviously, she's recording him.
Yeah, because she somehow blames them for Barb's death and
kind of rightfully so.
Yeah, she's a dog on the bone, so to speak, with this whole thing. She's mm-hmm. not letting it go. But yeah, man, it's pretty neat. Like, I like the idea of Hawkins Lab not really being this evil laboratory, and it sort of being this neutral, kind of adversarial, but possibly also helpful lab, maybe. I like that it has that mysterious, you don't know which way it could go status. I think mm-hmm. that's kind of neat.
Yeah.
Do we think it's plausible that that this man would take high school kids in here and show them around?
What do you mean? Do we think it's
do you think this is realistic? Do you, in the context of the story, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because we've already seen this guy and the way he interacts with Hopper and how he's like helping Joyce and Will. And I do really think that he wants to be like, hey, I'm the good guy. They were the bad, whether he's a good guy or not, he wants to appear that way. And sure. he knows that Nancy's already down this rabbit hole. And the best way to keep her reined in is to be on her side, mm-hmm. give her what she's looking for in sure. a way.
He also knows Jonathan is Will's brother. I'm sure he's pretty familiar with what is going on with Will.
Mm-hmm.
Will still continues to make an interesting test subject. I mean, if something befalls Jonathan or Nancy, all hell will break loose, right? I mean, I'm sure part of Hopper's agreement is not hurting these kids.
Of course.
Right?
Of course.
Yeah. But he says, look, I'm not the bad guy, but he also says, be careful. And he demonstrates how they are keeping this thing at bay by blowtorching it to death.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was meant to be a bit intimidating.
Of course.
Right?
Of course.
Nothing like incinerating another living creature to show that you mean fucking business.
Right.
So let's talk about Will's scribbles. All the drawings connect, we learn. They make a big, huge drawing. It seems fairly meaningless at first. Forking, branching, lightning, I don't know. Joyce says maybe it's roots. And Hopper starts to go, holy shit, killing. Yes, this is the source of the pumpkin blight. This right. is happening underground.
It's vines.
All of this starts to get connected back. And this is another thing that I think is so cool about this show is that we do this. We have these through lines that connect in plausible ways.
Mm-hmm.
The blight, oh, what's this mean? Something for Hopper to do? Yes, but it also ties back to the Upside Down. It also ties back to Will's visions. It also ties back to Will's drawing. It also ties back to Hawkins Lab. Like, it all connects and it's awesome. It's just cool storytelling.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. I like that we're getting everything connected now. We were establishing all these different things and they're like, but here's our, middle ground, essentially.
Yes, sure. Yep. But, and it's kind of a callback to season one with the lights,
Right.
Joyce gets this thing in her head to, let's connect them, let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
So, back at school, oh, and Hopper takes off, right?
Yeah, he's gotta go. He's figured this shit out.
Yeah, he's gonna dig below the blighted pumpkin patch and see if he can figure out why this is happening.
Right.
So back at school, Lucas asks Max of Dustin. She cold shoulders him pretty hard. He deserves it. Max says, you act like you want me to be your friends and then you treat me like garbage. I thought you guys wanted me in your party.
Mm-hmm.
Lucas says, well, there are things I can't tell you, things for your own safety. Talk to me about this scene.
I like this scene a lot because I like, one, Lucas saying this, like, hey, I can't tell you it's for your safety. Like, we're looking out for you. We're keeping secrets to help you. But this is where Max brings up Elle. Well, did you keep secrets from Elle? And Lucas is so shocked that she knows. And he kind of fumbles and he's like, well, it's different. It was different. You don't understand. And she's like, whatever, fucking peace out, bro.
Right.
But I like this because this is going to be interesting to see Lucas's next conversation with Mike about this.
Sure.
Like, hey, you told her about 11. What does she know? What have you told her? Like, Mike was, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or who told her?
Yeah.
Because sharing the information, like, about 11 a little, I think, gives her a real in the group that none of them planned on giving her. And so that's a surprising moment. And you can see he, like, falters there.
Right.
But
Max has a point here, right?
100%. She mm-hmm. does. She's had a point this whole time. They want to be her friend, but they don't actually want to let her in. They want her to help them, you know, let's look for Dart, but they don't want to give her any information about anything.
Right.
And it's not fair. Like, the way they treat her isn't fair.
It's not fair. And it's also not entirely unrealistic.
I agree with that too.
Right. You have to establish trust with somebody. It would be, I mean, this is almost equivalent to being like, oh, I just met this person. I'm in middle school. Here, read my diary.
You know, no, in middle school, you share your diary all the time.
Well, you know what I mean, though. Like, it's, there are levels to friendship, right?
Right.
And Max can't, I mean, she does, but normally you just can't expect to be granted VIP access immediately to certain things. I mean, right. There's being an asshole and saying, no, you can't come in this room with us while we talk about something right in front of her. And then there's other things. But, you know, these kids are in a unique position. They fought monsters. They know crazy, secretive things. And I personally believe that Lucas is trying to protect Max. But inadvertently, he might be protecting the entire AV club. Because we don't know about Max's relationship with Billy, who seems like a douchebag. And getting Max access to the AV room might mean Billy gets access to the AV room. And is that really what they want? There are things to think about. So even though Mike is kind of being douchey and they're kind of being a little bit douchey, they have a point here. They don't know this girl from fucking Adam. And they don't know what granting her access to this kind of information is going
to
do.
But they're still asking her to help them.
It's true.
You know what I mean? That's true. The thing that...
And that's where kids are being kids.
Exactly.
They're not being consistent all the time.
Right.
I get it. But she bounces, and she should, and I would too. And I'm not saying she's wrong. I'm just saying it's a crappy situation.
Right. Like Jesse Bev in the chat says, kids don't expect other kids to have secrets like this. So it makes sense that Max wouldn't understand that.
Of course.
She's correct.
Of course.
Everything Max feels emotionally is correct. But the kids really are doing it because they're trying to protect her. They just don't understand how it's coming off.
Right.
And especially when everyone's sharing and relating to her on a different level. Where like Dustin's all like, hey, I'm really into you. But then Mike's also confiding in her about things that are kind of outside of what they're normally talking about, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
So.
Good stuff.
I don't know.
Let's talk about this scene because I got a lot to say about it and it's pretty important. So Max takes off, leaves Lucas, which transitions to a scene between Billy and Max.
Yeah.
That kid you were talking to, who was he? Billy says. Max says, no one, blah, blah, blah. Billy and mean mugs Lucas. And he says to her, and this is pretty terrible to say to your adolescent sister, you're a piece of shit, even though we are family. This is serious shit. There are certain types of people in this world that you stay away from, and that kid is one of them. Stay away, Max. Stay away, he warns her pretty sternly. Let's talk about this.
Yeah, and let me tell you, and I haven't read any articles, but when you type "is Billy" into Google, mm-hmm. the first thing that comes up is Billy Race's Stranger Things. Okay. There are a million articles about this.
There's that spoiler territory.
No, I'm not going to. I'm just saying, like, this is not like we're being a little crazy here. Like, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, every single thing about this scene, like, screamed like racism to me, and it made me uncomfortable.
Sure. So I'm going to be devil's advocate for just a second here. Just because I think it's an interesting conversation. So if I start to think about this in a meta sense, right? It is 1984.
Okay.
I don't think Billy's the kind of guy who would beat around the bush here. Do you catch my drift? In 1984, an adolescent like this kid, who's kind of a piece of shit, like you've already said many times, I don't think he'd play let's read between the lines here. I think he'd explicitly tell her, we don't hang out with black people. I think he would use those lines. So the question becomes, is that something somebody would say? I absolutely know it's something somebody would say.
Okay.
And then is that just because Stranger Things doesn't want to touch that with a 10-foot pole? As a show, they don't want to fucking even go there. And they're just being subtle and cute? Because an adolescent asshole would say, we don't hang out with black people, or worse, N-word. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're not going to say that in Stranger Things. But is the show... So one of two things are happening here. He's being racist and the show is just toning it down because it's a show with kids in it and it's fucking fun and we don't want to go there. Or maybe there's something else going on here that we don't know about because we've only seen 4 episodes.
Like what?
I don't know.
That's the thing. That's,
you know?
That's I mean... And yes, I understand what you're saying. Like, okay, right. Well, wouldn't he be more overt? How do we know?
Because we've seen him the way he behaves.
We only know this guy so well. Like, is he going to talk overtly racist to his little sister? Like, is that his MO?
He calls her a piece of shit. I don't think he's going to mince words. I get Billy doesn't strike me as the guy who minces words, I guess is my point.
I don't necessarily think.
And it's not 2017, it's 1984.
And I also don't even necessarily think like he's in his head. Like, there's also the possibility that he's just saying like, hey, don't hang out with this kid. You know about people like that. Mm-hmm. And he's not in his head being like, I'm not making, like, he's not thinking that he's even saying something racist, that it's just like the undertones of racism.
Sure.
Like, I don't know. Like, maybe.
I don't know either. I'm literally playing devil's advocate just to have a conversation. I'm not saying I agree with my point. I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah, that you think he'd be.
No, I'm thinking, isn't that, it's possible, right? I'm just saying, is it possible?
I guess it is, but then why would he be saying the things that he's saying if it doesn't have a racist undertone?
That is a very good point. And then let's talk to the chat. The chat says, I don't think a character on Stranger Things are so one-note as Billy seems to be at this point. There has to be more to him, right?
God, I hope so.
Savannah Nelson says, they've already touched on the racism conversation with Mike and Lucas arguing over who has to be Winston Gosser, so I don't doubt they could continue conversation with Billy being racist. Yeah, they touched on it, but I think Mike wanted to be Venkman because Mike wanted to be the leader, not because Mike is somehow racist.
Right, but Lucas just made a comment on
it. Right, Lucas made the joke, which makes sense. I don't think that's racism. That's just making a joke.
No, but it's just touching on the idea that there's, you know, something there. There are certain type of people in this world that you stay away from.
Junkfest. There are certain kinds of criminally inclined individuals from certain social political statuses that we don't associate with, you fucking piece of shit. Close quote. Just weird writing, in my opinion.
Yeah, I understand. It is weird writing that he speaks to her the way he speaks to her, and he's more like not as open with, you know, everything else. But like, I'm just like, I have like the scene up right now, and like the stuff that he says to me is so like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like it. There's something. There are certain types of people in this world that you stay away from, mm-hmm. and that kid Max is one of them.
Yes.
That kid is one of them.
Yes.
What else does he mean?
Let me just clarify my statement. I immediately thought what you did, and then I started to think about it. That's all I'm saying.
I don't understand how you can explain that as anything else. There are certain types of people you stay away from. That kid is one of them. Mm-hmm. That black kid.
He didn't say that.
No, he didn't. But that's who she was talking to. She wasn't talking to one of the white kids in the group, and she's talked to them before, and he's seen her talk to the other kids before.
You're getting very excited. Are you okay?
I'm just making my point about it.
Right. All I'm saying is that in 1984, a fucking kid in high school wouldn't mince words, especially a kid like Billy. And maybe my point is, it's shitty writing. Maybe Junkfist is right. It's just bad writing. And it's the show being careful about the times we're in and the sensitivity and all that shit. And they don't want him to say something so overt that he's completely and utterly irredeemable. Because if Billy says something overtly like,
racist,
we don't hang out with black people, there's no way he's going to win the audience back.
Until somehow he bonds with Lucas at the end and they save somebody's life together. Yes, it's very fucking hard. No, but you're right. You're right. They want to make Billy a redeemable character and they want him to start out racist and then become less racist, or start out the way he is to Max and less so. It's a lot easier to have him be an asshole to Max and then somehow come around than for him to use the N-word and mean it and to come around on that just because of how we are culturally now.
Right.
So if you want Billy to be a good guy at the end, it's going to be real hard to do it if you make him overtly racist.
Correct.
But I don't care what the actor who plays him says. I don't care what anybody says. I watched that scene and that is the only thing I thought about. And it's going to be hard to convince me it was anything else.
Me too. But because I did a podcast and because I pay attention to actual dialogue, I thought it was important to at least explore alternative ideas and see if there is anything there worth talking about. That's all. I'm not saying I don't think he's racist. I definitely think we're supposed to believe he is. I'm just saying, interesting. Perhaps I am just going at this is not particularly well written, that these two characters in the confines of Billy's car, where he's not afraid to mince words in general. It's not like he's in the middle of class and kids are listening. He's alone with her in the car, which is where people show their true fucking colors.
Alone in the car?
Yeah, you know. In cars. Burn out. Hot burnout. Burnout. We are racist.
Billy's like, this
when
is
we
the moment.
Are in cars.
I stepped in the car. Now I can tell the truth. Always the truth in my car. I mean, he likes his car, it seems. So I guess there's that.
Yeah. Junkfist, I watched a couple of reacts with YouTubers, black YouTubers, who were like, oh, he's racist. Wait, what? Is he racist? Maybe he is. I don't know. I didn't want to look into it because I don't want it to be revealed in two episodes that he means because we're from fucking California and these dumb kids. Like, I don't know. I don't want to look into it because I don't want any spoilers.
It's just very hard for them to have done it the way they did it, because they did it where she was having a conversation with the one black kid in the show.
Right.
Like, if she was talking to Dustin and they had the same conversation, it would be different.
Of course.
Or if they had this conversation after she had been with any of the other guys. But their specific choice, if they didn't want you to question whether or not he was being racist, then they should have this conversation after she was talking to somebody who was as white as she is.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Yeah.
Because if not, we're going to question it, and you know what I mean?
Here's my take on it. I think he is, and I think it's bad writing. That's all.
Okay.
I think he is racist. I think we're supposed to believe he's racist, and I just think that they were a little concerned about being overtly racist to the point where it's undeniable that he meant black people.
Right.
That's all.
Which is understandable.
Which is Stranger Things going, everybody loves our show. I don't want to fuck this up just yet, especially if we got something more in mind for this actor, who's good. Billy's a good actor. Yeah. We might want more from him.
He's a good actor if you give him anything to do other than being an asshole. Like,
he's going to be an asshole.
Like, yeah, but work. I'd like him to do something else, or there's no point in him being on the show. Like, let's get to it.
We'll already. See. Relax.
I'm going upstairs and watching episode 5, and he better give me something. Let me tell you.
That way
it better
you can,
not be him giving Steve something.
That way you can reconcile the carnal feelings you have for him.
I don't have carnal feelings.
Guilt-free carnal feelings for Billy. Just call your friend Sam. She knows what's up. What's up, Sam? Hope you're listening.
Why? Because she loves Billy?
She never lets me down.
She knows about Billy?
She knows what's up.
She's like, he's looking good in those jeans.
She knows. She's looking good in that fucking shirts for a skins basketball game.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, motherfuckers. All right. So, let's continue.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know what they're saying in the chat. Something about being racist isn't exclusively using the words black or whatever slur, so they don't have to. It's supposed to be about racism from Savannah. I don't disagree with you. My point is, I don't think Billy's the kind of guy who would mince words. I think he would overtly say what the fuck was on his mind, because he's already demonstrated that he's kind of an asshole. I'm not talking about a white guy trying to protect his career who's like, well, you don't associate with those people. Like one of those fucking scummy racists. I feel like Billy would be overtly racist if he in fact was racist.
But we don't know him very well.
We don't. It's fair. I'm just saying.
He's quietly racist. That's all.
So anyway, let's carry on.
Let's.
Shall we?
Sure.
All right. Take me to the next scene.
Let's see. I gotta figure
Hopper gets to digging. Killer shot at him with a shovel. That shot of him walking out with a shovel over his shoulder is amazing.
Wait, we're way ahead, aren't we? I think you're way ahead.
We're talking
Am
about,
I wrong?
No, you're oh, I just, definitely wrong.
I just didn't write down that scene because it was just like 1 second of him with
yeah,
a shovel.
Yeah, then it hops to 11 going through the papers.
So I'm like, wait, my next notes are about 11.
So let's talk about the moment where Matthew Anderson cries.
Oh my God, Matthew Anderson must have had a really hard time with this episode.
If you don't know who Matthew Anderson is because this is your first time tuning in, he's another host with LSG Media who does a science fiction film podcast and the Walking Dead podcast for now. And he hops in to do Stranger Things sometimes. And I just want Matt to know, Matt, if you're listening, I feel for you, buddy. I'm going to hug you. I'm giving you a virtual hug. I'm pressing your cheek against my bosom and telling you that 11's going to be okay. I know this is hard for you to watch. I know that you're sick of seeing 11 go through hell. And I want you to know that I really felt for you in this moment. And I'm sad for you. Okay.
So sad.
So sad we all. Ooh, that was pretty good. Jessica, go.
So she's going through the files, reading information basically on the lab. And then she finds a file on her mother. She sees a picture of her with Papa, quote unquote. Then mm-hmm. she decides to go into that weird place she goes into where she gets to see what people are up to. And she goes to see her crazy mother, who yes. is super crazy. And this is really incredibly depressing. And I'm getting to the point where I'm starting to feel like Matthew Anderson. And I don't know if I can take this little girl crying anymore.
Mm.
I literally don't know if I can take it.
I tell you what, I didn't expect in chapter 4, season 2, for 11 to stumble upon her origins. And I think this is awesome because it was unexpected to me.
Yeah, for sure.
I didn't know what was going to happen as a result of this fight. I had no idea. I don't think... And this is another thing that Stranger Things is good at. The fight was important because of the context of the fight. It wasn't just used for her to discover the trapdoor.
Right.
It just so happens that she discovered the trap door, which is also important. It's cool, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And this is hardcore. So she learned that her name was Jane, that her mom is named probably Terry. She connects Jane to Mama. She decides to do this little astral walk thing. And I wrote, she's like one of those shitty Bluetooths. Remember you'd have to tune into a blank radio station to get your Bluetooth to work to play your phone? That's what she does. Oh, shit, we're going to a new state. We got to change the station. Anyway, she blindfolds herself, dives in, finds Terry. Terry mumbles to herself, something like 3 to the left and 4 to the right or something.
I'm sure something's going to come back and be important.
It's 100% going to come back and be important because that's how this shit works.
Mm-hmm.
And Elle reaches for Mama, who disappears into nothingness, and it's pretty devastating. I love the pull away as she sits there. We pull way away, shrinking her with all the blackness around her. And the blackness, of course, being the subject of the chant.
Mm-hmm.
And then, bang, she screams for Mama, and Matthew Anderson weeps.
Oh, my God. He cried so much. I just know it.
Boy, this is going to be important the rest of the season, this scene.
Yes.
Eleven's going to want answers from Hopper. Hopper's going to need to come up with answers for Eleven.
Mm-hmm.
That's that. And I am pumped about this. I think this is a great development for Eleven. Do you know why? Because we're 4 episodes in. We know she's sad. We know she's isolated. We know. Now what's her struggle going to be?
Yep.
We need more for her to do, right?
Yeah.
And this is well-timed.
I agree.
Pumped.
Very interested in how this is going to go. I think it's going to be a very interesting plot line.
Mike goes to Will's house. Joyce tells Mike that it's not a good time. Mike asks if this is about the shadow monster, which immediately gets Jane's attention.
But I mean, Joyce,
sorry.
Jane is 11.
That's right. This gets Joyce's attention, which of course was not resolved. This episode will come up next episode.
Yes.
And Jonathan and Nancy get freed. The car starts right up, which they make a note of because Jonathan sort of looks at Nancy.
They like, look at each other like,
hmm.
Yeah. And then just like Billy, Jonathan tells all his secrets in this car, his safe place.
I really hate that kid, Dustin. I hate people with curly hair. They really piss me off.
What about when he didn't have those teeth? It was the worst.
I fucking hate people with that. Well, we don't associate with those people.
Yeah, toothless, curly-haired children.
Jesus Christ. Nancy taped the whole conversation, though. And she's getting real fire starter here. Let's burn it to the ground.
I love it. Like, Dr. Owen's like, that worked out real well. We got those kids feeling real good about how we're helping. We're getting justice for Barb.
Indeed.
And then Nancy's like, I'm going to fucking burn you bastards. Yeah. Bye.
Yep.
Good work, Nancy.
Nancy continues her war path.
I like it.
Because we know Barb's dead, and that was a main thrust of Nancy's motivation last season. So she needs motivation this season to do something, right?
Yeah.
And that's
justice
to
for
hold
Barb.
Accountable those who killed Barb. Who
Hashtag.
Were, in her opinion, responsible for Barb's death.
Justice for Barb.
Who's going to give us justice for Muse is the question, because he got eaten.
This is really bad.
It's gross.
Because the first time...
Yummy cat guts.
So as soon as we finished recording episode 3, we went right upstairs and watched episode 4.
Mm-hmm.
And Dean said, I'm pretty sure you said, it's going to be eating the cat.
Yep,
like, that
I
cat's
did.
Dead. And I said, oh, no. And then it was, and I was devastated. And then I almost forgot that it happened until we were rewatching it, and the mom was trying to feed Muse, and I was like, oh my God, I forgot about that cat dying. And it was hard for me, guys. Like, you know how I feel. This was real hard for me.
Eating the cat. So his one pet eats the other pet. That's a bummer.
Yeah, well, one pet is like the Demogorgon. So honestly, he's bad.
Yep. Junk Fist brings up a good point about how they should have searched the bag. What if she had a gun or something like that? It just seems silly.
I agree.
Yep, it's a little silly. They should have searched the bag.
I 100% agree that there are some plot holes in this whole her being able to record the conversation, unless they're doing another double cross on her somehow. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But it is.
It's possible.
It's very questionable for them. They had them locked in an interrogation room and they didn't go through their stuff. I agree. That is a problem.
Yep, they should have went through the bag. At minimum, they should be patting them down, let alone the fucking bag.
Yeah, like maybe she was like wearing a wire, but it's like a giant recording device. It's like a thing they use in Mindhunter that guy carries into the room all the time. It's like humongous.
Yeah, she pulls out a .45 and just starts icing people, right?
Fucking, like, fuck.
There's a shooting at the Hawkins lab. Great.
You should have patted her down.
Good point by Junk Fist. It's definitely an overstep in this episode, I will say.
There are some definite problems with this Nancy's current storyline
and
how it's playing out.
It's
for me.
It is.
For sure.
Yeah, there are some problems of plausibility.
Yes.
Letting them in, trying to manipulate them, not checking her bag.
And also, I have to be honest, because I'm like a Nancy fan overall.
Me too.
But I'm not into this shit right now. Like,
not into it?
I don't know why. Like, Nancy comes on screen, I used to be like, yes, Nancy, what is going on? And now I'm like, eh.
Well, we'll see. Give it time.
Yeah, I guess.
Hopper finds some underground tunnels. Very cool music. The tunnels seem vast.
Did we talk about how Dart is a Demogorgon?
Oh, right. Because of those little face things.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that we're on. We don't forget that shit.
Great.
Great. Another Demogorgon. Have a shadow monster to worry about. And now this Dungeons & Dragons creepy thing is back too.
Yeah, not good.
Bad news.
Hopper finds underground tunnels. Of course, he connects it when she starts saying roots. Right? That's yes. How he makes his connection.
And then he
roots.
Says vines.
He's like, oh, fuck. The thing that is killing everyone's pumpkin fields randomly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in a normal situation, you might not associate this with pumpkin patches. But when you've witnessed the things that occur with the Upside Down, you have a kid with psionic abilities and pumpkins are dying inexplicably. And you're thinking vines, roots, holy shit, maybe they're under the pumpkin patch. I don't think this is too far of a stretch for him to go investigating.
I agree.
Something weird's going on in the pumpkin patches, and maybe it's below the pumpkin patches.
But I get the idea that she said roots, and that in his head made him think roots, things that grow underground. Why are all these pumpkins dying? It doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. And that's how he made that connection. That makes sense. The connection makes sense to me.
I'm fine with it.
It does.
Yep.
So that's just me, though.
So anyway, the tunnels seem very vast. The music's cool. I like how they tilt the camera give us a disorient. Disorientation right to the Upside Down. Kabloosh.
Yeah, I like that. I'm also a fan, I must say.
Good stuff. And that's it. That is chapter 4, Will the Wise.
Sure is.
Any final thoughts?
I thought this was an interesting episode, and I think that now we're starting to get past our establishing into like shit is now happening.
Yep.
Dustin now setting has a pet conflict. Monster that is killing things.
Mm-hmm.
Hopper has gone into the Upside Down and he knows what's going on. Eleven is going to be on a rampage.
Mm-hmm.
And Will is possessed by a shadow monster, essentially.
Yep. And so, Billy is racist.
And Billy is racist and maybe secretly
Billy
gay.
Billy is a racist? Question mark.
Billy is a racist and maybe secretly gay, maybe. in my heart, that's what he is.
Okay. I don't think so. That's it. I don't really have anything else left to say. I think I'm good. Are you good?
I think so.
You think so?
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I guess we're going to get out of here. Thank you guys for tuning in. We will be returning shortly with a live recording of Chapter 5, which neither of us have seen yet. Of course, we've only seen up to the episodes we're talking about. So thank you guys very much for your time. We will catch you all on the flip side.
Bye, guys.